This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Minutes from kickoff in a big matchup, but before we get to the preview, we got to tell you about one of our favorite partners, the official horse racing partner of VSiN, First Bet. It's built for bettors who demand more. First Bet, not just about placing a bet, it's about helping bettors of all levels with proprietary AI handicapping tools that provide data-driven insights to help make smarter bets. First Bet's in-app tools give you win place and show probabilities for each runner so you can quickly and easily identify good value plays and improve your ROI. And right now, you can take advantage of their limited time $250 sign-up offer. To claim your bonus, use promo code VSiN. VSIN250 when you sign up in the FirstBet app or at FirstBet.com. That's promo code VSIN250. Minutes away from kickoff between Michigan and Texas. Interesting game from a narrative standpoint and a lot of different numbers across the board. 5.5, the number at the book that I'm sitting at here in favor of Texas with a total of 49.5, the predominant number everywhere else for the total. This has been an interesting journey for this number. Obviously, a lot of noise around a bowl game like this between these two-storied programs in the Citrus Bowl. We obviously know what's going on with Michigan, DePoggi taking over in the interim, and Texas with a rash of opt-outs here that has probably led this team to look quite a bit different than what you thought. 7 of its top 11 defenders, if you look at it by snap count, quite a few running backs as well, not playing in this game for the Texas Longhorns. Arch Manning will be out there. And on the flip side, Michigan does deal with a few guys that are off to maybe better places as well, or just not playing here today, including Derek Moore, Barham in the linebacking core, both getting ready for the NFL draft. So this is an interesting matchup. Poggi taking over, probably when you look at where he's at in terms of taking this bowl game after wanting the job for so long and yet not getting it as a pro, he'll probably be able to get this done and get this team to play. And Bryce Underwood, who at times has really struggled against some stouter defenses on the surface, you would think this is a pretty stout defense. But with so many guys gone, you do wonder what Texas brings to the table on that end. A lot of noise. I think it's probably easy to sit out in terms of betting this thing. So we'll see what exactly both teams are going to bring for us here. But 4.5, the number at DraftKings, 5.5 here at Circa with a total of 50.5. One of the many contests we will keep an eye on here today. But we do have a couple of games set to tip off in the association. So let's hit a couple of these before we get to some bigger picture stuff in the NBA. Coming up in 8 minutes, the Orlando Magic set to take on the Indiana Pacers. And Orlando does have a couple of things it has to clean up here if it's going to get this done. Current number, 4.5 in favor of the Magic with a total of 230 or 229.5, depending on where you shop. This has been quite a rough stretch for the Orlando Magic without Franz Wagner on the floor. Paolo Banchero has not been holding up his end of the bargain as a lone scorer, and it's pretty tough because Suggs has been injured, as has been Franz Wagner, and so there is a lot on Banchero's shoulders to create for an offense which has been scuffling. Last time out against Toronto on the 29th, Banchero does give them 23 points, 15 rebounds on 9 of 19 shooting. That broke a stretch, though, where he had scored fewer than 15 points, and in the three previous games to that, we're talking about 12.3 points per game, 5.7 assists on 41% shooting. Orlando is not really a team that I think at this point you can fully trust to come in here, even against an Indiana Pacers squad that has scuffled. Their offense has been abysmal, and of course, they have been shredded with injuries themselves. But Orlando, not in a position, I think, that you're going to feel comfortable laying this number, even in a spot like this, against a team like the Indiana Pacers. Injury report for this team and names that we're keeping an eye on, of course. Desmond Bane, the questionable tag coming into this game, as is Jonathan Isaac. And then for the other side, some names that we pretty much know about. The notable one, probable for TJ McConnell. He was on the report here for the Indiana Pacers. But Indiana, as they head into this on a lengthy losing streak at this point right now, also have not been covering numbers either. This is one of the uglier games you're going to see from a overall standpoint in terms of recent results and what the two teams have provided for you to this point here. Minnesota at Atlanta. This is one that I think is something you can back here. Play a little money line for the Minnesota Timberwolves against the Atlanta Hawks. Earlier in the day, this thing's up, though, to 6 now in favor of Minnesota with a total of 240. This thing opened, this game, that is, at 2.5 on the overnight with a total of 243.5. But the Atlanta Hawks, you talk about teams that aren't in good form right now, really struggling to find out what their identity is since Trae Young has been in this lineup, which, by the way, has not gone well. But Atlanta comes into this thing having lost, I think, 6 straight now, has only covered 2 of those. However, came in the last two games for Atlanta, so maybe the market getting out a little too far on the power rating for the Hawks, given how bad this has become. But at this point, even prior to Trae Young's return, they had not been playing well. Young officially out for this game. The only notable name from Minnesota is Terrence Shannon Jr. And the Timberwolves, you talk about turnarounds. This Timberwolves team has turned things around somewhat in this season. So it's a matchup between two teams, especially an Atlanta team that has really struggled defensively. And I do think that this is a matchup that Minnesota obviously get it done when it was a little bit shorter, but now up to 6, 5.5. And you sit back and wait and see if this number is going to come down a little bit. We'll get to Phoenix and Cleveland with Zach Cohen. He's a big Suns guy. That doesn't tip off for another 40 minutes or so between those two. Did want to hit on something really quickly before we get to the rest of this card, though. I really do enjoy our followers, our listeners, everything like that. Everybody that interacts with us for the show. And you like having conversations outside of like the really angry ones around MVP because it does, I think, spark some ideas when you're talking about thoughts for bets, things of that nature. And one came across for me that I thought was really interesting. Shout out to Colin, who had tweeted us this morning saying DK, DraftKings, has hung 50-1 on Donovan Mitchell to win Clutch Player of the Year. Cavs showing signs of playing better, as he says. Favorable schedule in January, February. It leads the league in fourth quarter scoring. Second in minutes, second in plus minus on 52% shooting. Tied for second in steals, 44% from three. Maybe worth a play for Donovan Mitchell to win Clutch Player of the Year at 50-1. So it got my gears turning on a couple of things. First off, just Donovan Mitchell on Clutch Player of the Year and whether that was worth it. As I had responded to Colin, you know, looking into it a little bit more, the actual clutch time numbers for Donovan Mitchell, not particularly great. 2.7 points, 0.7 rebounds, 0.1 assists, 39% shooting, and the Cavs are 6-10 in clutch games. And for those who are just joining us, don't know off the top of your head, clutch games within 5 points, five or fewer minutes left to go. But it did get me to go down the wormhole. And we were talking about this on the Hardwood Handicappers group chat. There's a couple of guys that do stick out for this award. Longer shots, potentially. And I know a lot of people, including producer Rick, might roll their eyes at the things that I'm about to say here. This is a pretty good profile. Just listen to this for a clutch player, then we'll get to the games. 4.1 points, 0.7 rebounds, 0.6 assists. Again, this is clutch time. So this is the final 5 minutes of a game with five or fewer minutes left to go. 45.2% shooting, plus 2.2 per clutch game in terms of plus minus, and his team is 9-6 in those contests. He has a plus 18.1 net rating in clutch time this season as well. Come on down, Keontae George. Can this guy not do anything? I mean, come on. He's incredible. And the market is finally starting to catch up here. He has surpassed Jalen Duren for most improved player of the year odds. He's gotten to single digits. He's sitting there at 8-1. The number of NBA media members who are starting to get into the Keontae George most improved player symphony, if you will, it is getting louder and louder for him to potentially win this. These are the odds for clutch player of the year, too. You'll see that you don't really see Keontae George on this list. There's a lot of good names. Cade Cunningham, by the way, I think is probably going to win this award. I think you can view this potentially as a faux MVP type award at plus 260. He is your favorite to do so. And yes, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, interestingly enough, is the second shot on this board. He's only played 13 clutch games, but his numbers are incredible. 7.7 points on 52% shooting from the floor in clutch minutes. Oh, and by the way, the Thunder, they're 10-3 in the 13 games they've played that have entered clutch time. The other, though, is Tyrese Maxey that I thought was worth bringing up here. He's sitting at about 8-1. Again, clutch time is a literal statistic, so I do think that kind of helps your handicap here. I don't know if fourth quarter scoring is a big part of this or whether it's just specifically clutch time and where these guys perform in those minutes, but the 76ers with Maxey on the floor in clutch time, they're 12-8 in those games. He's averaged 4 points, 0.4 rebounds, and 0.9 assists on 41% shooting from the floor, so he's not as efficient, but they're winning those clutch games, and he's got a plus 11.7 net rating. This is a weird award. It's a very new award. We haven't really seen a ton of evidence. It puts us one way or the other. But I do think that this is going to be a pretty interesting one. And, you know, shout out to our folks who sit there and get you on some of these little wormholes, Colin, that makes you think a little bit more about what these awards are going to be, what they look like, and who potentially could win it. But clutch is going to be fun. Cade's the rightful favorite. I'd actually say a plus 260 if he keeps it up here, obviously. That's going to be the award only because I don't think he's going to be able to win MVP, as we discussed yesterday. And so one of those little, oh, you know what, kid, we'll give you this type of awards might be it. He has been very, very good so far this year and has had quite a few game winners to his name as well. So does Keontae George, by the way. All right, really quickly, Looks like the Hornets may be letting go of the rope here right now. Golden State currently up on top of the Charlotte Hornets, 116 to 108. Just about 5.5 minutes left to go. We are going to be holding on to our rear ends in this game as we are trying to will the Charlotte Hornets to stay inside of 7.5. 116-111 after a three goes down with 5.5 minutes left to go between these two teams. One game I wanted to bring up, and I think we're going to hit this with Zach coming up in 15 minutes as well, but I do think it's an interesting matchup. New York Knicks on the road against the San Antonio Spurs. Let's go here. Spurs open up as a 1.5-point favorite, total of 234.5. Now laying about 2.5 or 3 with a total of that 234.5 still standing strong. Injury report for the New York Knicks. Josh Hart out. Mitchell Robinson out. Those are two really big pieces that aren't going to be available for the New York Knicks. And oddly enough, and as Zach pointed out in his write-up today, both of them key on the glass. Josh Hart is a very good rebounder for a guard. We know how good Mitchell Robinson can be, especially on the offensive glass. If you go back to when the San Antonio Spurs lost to the New York Knicks in that matchup here in Las Vegas in the NBA Cup, big reason why the Knicks were able to pull that off. I believe it was 6 offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter alone for Mitchell Robinson that helped kept them alive and, of course, led to some open shots for New York. Do think you're in a little bit of a better revenge spot here against San Antonio? And think about this, too. I mean, look, we were sitting there the other day in this NBA Cup final, and obviously injuries are part of this. Knicks were just laying 2.5 on a neutral, and now San Antonio laying 2.5 here at home with a questionable Stephon Castle. So we'll see how that goes. Seems a little short, but given the injuries and, of course, the situation with revenge on the mind, San Antonio might be in a good enough spot here to get this done today at home against the Knicks. All right, we'll keep an eye on the end of this matchup between Golden State and Charlotte. We're also out on the field between Michigan and Texas. This is how these days are going to go over the next few because we got a lot going on during the show. When we come back, more of our previews for tomorrow's college football playoff games. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Longhorns first on the board, up 3-0 over Michigan right now, early in the first quarter. We'll keep an eye on that as at least you get an opening scoring drive for Texas. Bryce Underwood and the Wolverines out on the field right now. Nice completion for Michigan as they continue to keep their drive alive. So we'll keep our eye there. Also still tied. It looked like this is going to be a big shootout between Duke and Arizona State. Right now, though, slowed down a little bit. Still 14-0 with 11:40 left to go in the second. And Vandy continues to try to make this a comeback, but it is getting late early. 4:08 left to go in the fourth. Iowa maintains a 34-24 lead over Vandy in the Relia Quest Bowl. With that, let's talk about our college football playoff, which gets started again tonight as we will see Miami and Ohio State go at it this evening. Very much looking forward to it. Intriguing game, despite the fact that it is a 9.5-point spread. And speaking of that, you know, some would say that Miami deserves a little bit more respect when it comes to the betting market and its thoughts on the differences between Ohio State and Miami. One of those people would be Chris the Bear Felica. Let's see what he has to say about what we're going to see today.
I think the line at 9.5 is completely disrespectful. I think that Miami defensive line is going to be a problem for Ohio State. We talked about how I thought it was going to be a problem for A&M, and it was. This is by far the second best opponent that Ohio State has faced all year. Indiana is the only other team in this stratosphere that Ohio State has faced in terms of defensive pressure. And we saw what happened in that game. Ohio State struggled. I think the Canes have a great chance to win the game. Do I think they're going to be able to move the ball up and down the field? Probably not. They're going to have to get more out of Carson Beck. They're going to have to get more out of their receivers. But I like the Canes a whole lot.
I think what's interesting, if you listen to smarter football people when you talk about film analysis for Indiana in the way that this is going to go, because the point about pressure is well taken. We brought this up a little bit earlier in the program. We talked about this matchup, and one of the things that was going to make a difference is getting after Julian Sain. Again, some of the numbers for you in the Big Ten championship game, Sain pressured on 12 of 34 dropbacks, 5 sacks allowed. He's only been pressured on 24.9% of his dropbacks throughout the year. So to get pressured on over a third in a single game, probably a really big shock to the system when you're talking about the way that he is used to playing at this point. Having said that, what I think is interesting about those who analyze the way these teams play, one of the things that Indiana did in that game and that does generally is disguise the way it's going to rush the passer. Different ways of sending guys, stunts, things like that, not just a straight pass rush. Will Miami mix up the way they decide to send their pass rushers at Julian Sain in this matchup to then get some of that pressure generated outside of just generally rushing your four guys? I think it's going to be a really fascinating thing to see if that wrinkle will actually take place. And if it does, will they be able to get that done as well? The other aspect of this, as we mentioned with Stormy Bonatoni when she joined us in the first hour, is the aspect of the layoff. As we saw last year, all four of the higher-seeded teams ended up losing, and, of course, the Dogs moving on. Having said that, Stormy brought up a great point, which is, well, we know what the status was of those higher-seeded teams. This is why we changed the format. Is it a format issue or is it not? Here was Ryan Day on what the layoff means for his team. All right, we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later. I'll fire that later. Okay, got it. Thank you. All right, Ohio State a 9.5-point favorite, total of 40.5 right here in this matchup. Do like Miami. We'll see if we get this to 10. If it gets there, I'll bite to see if we're going to be able to get that big number for the Hurricanes. I think they're good enough defensively. I think they'll be able to mix things up. And I also think that Carson Beck in a much more favorable situation in terms of environment, weather-wise, obviously in a controlled environment. Now he'll be able to at least do a little bit more than what we saw last week, last time out, I keep saying last week, against Texas A&M. All right, let's talk about some of the other games here and get into some of the minutia of some of these other matchups. Oregon and Texas Tech, we talked about this matchup with Stormy a little bit. She's obviously working the sideline tomorrow morning. Talking more about why I kind of believe the market is getting this right, my initial thought on the surface was, you know what? I like Texas Tech defensively. I think they're going to be able to get after this. Dante Moore, as you remember, was pressured quite a bit against Indiana as well. Common thread there, as we're just talking about. Saw this open 1.5 in some spots. We're up to 2.5 in the other direction. There's a lot of different aspects to this game. One of the things that Stormy brought up with us yesterday was the health report for Oregon. Essentially, look, Baron Morton feeling healthier, getting out of the boot. It's a good nugget. He had been wearing the boot throughout the weeks leading up to these games and then just taking them off for the contest itself and putting it right back on. Now fully healthy, out of the boot as a whole. But Oregon itself, too, is benefiting from better health. We saw DeCorian Moore and Gary Bryant Jr., who missed the final few games of the year, come back against James Madison. Question becomes, will they have a bigger role now? Gary Bryant Jr. only played in 8 snaps against JMU. DeCorian Moore played 19 snaps versus JMU. So now, with Moore layoff and a game under the belt, do you see both of those guys get larger roles? And when you get to that aspect of larger roles for this offense, these wide receivers challenging the secondary, it does get back to Dante Moore, the protection, and how this is going to go, and whether or not Texas Tech will be able to rush more in this game. Tech was tied for 6th in the nation with 39 sacks for this season in 13 games. 24th in sack percentage at just under 8%. And we know the names that they have along this defensive line that will be able to get it done. David Bailey with 77 pressures on the year. Romello Height with 58. We can go on and on with the guys that are on this defensive line that can get after the passer if you're the Red Raiders. Your efficiency numbers were pretty good through the air on defense if you're Texas Tech. But do you wonder a little bit, because this has been the big point of contention for anybody who has talked about this Texas Tech team, strength of schedule. You haven't played anybody. Namely, if you really look at it, you haven't played a quarterback anywhere near the level of a Dante Moore, save for potentially one, and that was Sam Levitt, who went 28 of 47, threw for 319 yards and a touchdown in a game in which Arizona State won against Texas Tech. And you look at Dante Moore and what he brings to the table, completed over 70% of his passes, 8.9 yards per attempt, doesn't put the ball in danger either. Really good touchdown to interception ratio as well. Can you get to him? And if you cannot, are you going to be able to cover a healthier wide receiver room that Oregon now has? One data point I think you do have in favor for Texas Tech is that matchup against Indiana. Indiana pressured Moore on 20 of 42 of his dropbacks in that game. That's over 45% of his dropbacks against Indiana in which he was pressured and obviously sacked six times. Four of those six sacks came on downs in which he wasn't blitzed. So Indiana was just sending their four or three guys. They were ultimately getting there as well. Can you replicate that pressure? Going back to what we talked about with the way that you send that pressure at different times, can you also do what Indiana did at times against Ohio State and in this matchup, which is disguise it, send it from different areas? Because if you can, Dante Moore under pressure at times. Look, I think all quarterbacks, Humans always says this, all quarterbacks play poorly under pressure. Dante Moore, if you look at his numbers, if you remove the Indiana game, by the way, he's only been pressured on 20% of his dropbacks. This isn't to say that he's not going to get pressured. It's just to say that, again, like we talked about Julian Sayin, you talk about a quarterback who is not used to being pressured consistently. It would also be Dante Moore, who's been very used to operating from a clean pocket. So if you can muddy the waters for him a little bit, you would think it goes a long way. He's completed 60% of his passes under pressure. He's thrown three touchdowns and two interceptions, and you see his turnover-worthy play rate spike to 3.4%. That's going to be the key here for Texas Tech. But on the flip side, I understand Morton being healthier is a big deal, and it's a pretty good thing for Texas Tech that he now feels fully comfortable in this spot now. But this is an offense that is very reliant on generating explosive plays, and you do wonder if they're going to be there for the Red Raiders. They're 90th in expected points added per play. They're 86th in success rate. They're just above the 25th percentile in non-explosive expected points added per play. They need these chunk plays to get this done from an offensive standpoint, and Oregon, they've got a small issue with allowing explosive plays at times, just about the 35th percentile in explosive pass rate play allowed. But down to down, Oregon's pretty good. You're talking about success rate. They're 16th in the country. EPA per play, they're 8th. Non-explosive EPA per play allowed. They're the 90th percentile. So this is generally, down to down, a defense that is going to be able to contain things in front of them. They will allow an explosive here or there, so maybe that's how Texas Tech stays inside of this. But if Morton and Texas Tech cannot generate explosives, what does this offensive effort look like? And that's ultimately why I get back to where this number went and why it went where it did. At 2.5, I think it makes a little bit more sense from the matchup standpoint, from the standpoint of Texas Tech being overly reliant on generating big plays and taking on a defense that can really mask those. I think that's going to be something that does work in Oregon's favor. Now, the other games we have, we'll get into these a little bit more a little bit later after we're done talking with Zach Cohen. But Alabama-Indiana is going to be a really fascinating one. Talk about numbers telling the story. Well, this got to 7. There was a rogue 7.5 out there as well after open 6.5 with a total of 49.5. And no real rush to knock down that 7 right now as we are sitting at a full one across the board with a total of 47.5. The biggest question you have, can Alabama run the ball? What does their offense even look like? We'll answer that a little bit more on the other side. Quick update for some of you out there. First off, in the NBA, we're sweating out this morning window contest between the Golden State Warriors and the Charlotte Hornets. Of course, right on the number. 27 seconds left, 130 to 122 right now. So Charlotte trying to stay inside of 8, 7.5, depending on where you got your number, with just under 30 seconds left to go. And Vandy going to make this thing interesting at the very least. 34-27, 2:07 left to go in the fourth. And Iowa is trying to salt this thing away right now in the ReliaQuest Bowl. And your other scores remain the same. Michigan currently trailing Texas 3-0, 7:50 left to go in the first of the Citrus Bowl. And still tied up, a game that looked like it was going to sail over at 14 apiece, 7:51 left to go in the second. Duke and Arizona State tied at 14. On the other side, let's get into the full card, of course, with Zach Cohen, get his best bets and more before we get out of here in the next 30 minutes on this New Year's Eve.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Bit of sweat, but it got there, thank goodness. And you can get there too with a lot of great analysis, so make sure you check it out. Start the new year off as a better with a VSiN Pro subscription. It's the final week. Save 50% off the regular monthly price with our holiday special. Sign up now. Get VSiN Pro access through May 1st for just $79. That includes daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, covering everything from the college football playoffs and NFL playoffs to March Madness and the Masters. Plus, you receive our college football playoff betting guide, complete with expert brackets, Steve Mackin's power ratings, CFP and bowl best bets, previews for every bowl game. Start the new year with an edge. Steph Curry with 26 points, but not enough to cover the number. The Charlotte Hornets hold on for dear life, 132 to 125 to get this thing done. Let's head out to the Progressive guest line and welcome in our NBA analyst, host of Hardwood Handicappers, and, of course, author, senior editor, up on the website of VSiN.com, Zach Cohen, who is also on the Charlotte Hornets here. Good to get the victory into the coffers. So let's look ahead to what we've got ahead of us here, Zach. I mentioned that you had a thought on the San Antonio Spurs, revenge spot against the New York Knicks. So let's start there. What do you make of this? And what's the latest? I know Stephon Castle was questionable to play. Josh Hart, Mitchell Robinson are out.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going to happen with Castle yet, but I do think that the Hart and Mitch absences for New York are absolutely huge, because those are two of the only guys on the team that, you know, really dig in defensively every single night. Both of them hit the offensive glass very hard. I think with no Robinson especially, though, you're talking about Wembanyama going up against Karl Anthony Towns or, you know, whatever inexperienced center New York plays in his absence. And I think it's going to go really well for Wemby. And I do like, you know, that the Spurs have some really strong point of attack defenders for Brunson. I just kind of think this is a game where, with no Hart and Mitch, New York's going to be relying heavily on, you know, just offensive execution. And it's going to be hard against San Antonio, especially with the Knicks being a pretty weak road team this year. I think they're 0-3 both straight up and against the spread when playing as road underdogs. And this Spurs team, I think, is 9-4 straight up as a home favorite.
So the Knicks, of course, in contention for the one seed in the Eastern Conference, and that would put your best player in any other year in contention for an MVP. With the news that Jokic is going to miss a month and this thing now looking like it is very much going back to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, is there a chance that any of the two best players for the Eastern Conference contenders, the Pistons or the Knicks, Jalen Brunson and Cade Cunningham, can they steal this thing from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander?
It's funny you framed it that way, because I actually think you left out the one guy I would take if I were hoping for an injury, and that would be Jaylen Brown. I think that he's been playing at an all-NBA level for Boston this year, and that team has been dragged to, you know, the third seed in the Eastern Conference despite having a very, very weak roster. And I think that the numbers that Brown's put up have been great. I think that he's been good on the defensive end of the floor as well, just kind of like he has, you know, throughout the entirety of his career. But I do think it's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and really, if you take anybody else, you're pretty much hoping for an injury. And I think that that's really kind of a sad state of affairs. I wrote it at VSiN.com. I believe I heard you say it as well yesterday, but they got to get rid of the 65-game minimum, because It's now penalizing players that are actually injured as opposed to serving the purpose that it originally was supposed to, with whatever it was, with load management or tanking, whatever it is. It's just the 65-game thing has not made sense, and it's actually hurting players that are deserving of winning.
Yeah, I would expect that this is probably going to be the last year when you have guys like Jokic and Wembanyama who are going to miss out because of that minimum. And who knows? Hey, look, technically Wembanyama is still active and he can still get that threshold. We'll see if he can actually meet the minimum amount of games. All right, let's zoom out here. And one more thing on this injury for Denver and the injuries, by the way, they're down four guys. They'll play a little bit later today against Toronto. They're plus 750 right now to win the NBA Finals. Do you foresee this number drifting out any further as they slide down the standings? Because I will be sitting back and waiting for an opportunity to grab something, especially if the Nuggets get to double digits. The timelines add up to the point where all of these guys should be back well ahead of April.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. Like, I'm not too worried about them as a title contender. I do think you're probably going to get a better price in 2 weeks or so when their record's just worse and, you know, naturally people start to panic. But I'm with you. Like, you're going to get Joker, Johnson, I believe Brown and Gordon all back at around the same time with, you know, 30 or so games left in the season. And at the rate that this team wins when they are healthy, I think that will help them avoid the play-in. And I think if they avoid the play-in, they have a really good chance to win the title. And I said on Friday's Hardwood Handicappers show, this would be my pick to win the NBA Finals right now because of some of the late game stuff that we've seen from OKC, because of some of the bad shooting. I think a lot of people naturally went and bet the Spurs at a bigger number. But My thoughts watching that OKC struggle against San Antonio was this team's going to have trouble with Denver and that two-man game late in games, and especially a Nuggets team that is a little bit improved when compared to last season. So I do think Denver's got a real good shot of winning, but I'm with you. I think that after some panic sets in with the record, there's going to be a better number.
Famously pushed the Thunder to 7 despite Aaron Gordon playing on one leg and Michael Porter Jr. playing with one shoulder. And I think that fully healthy and a little bit better, they could totally push them and maybe even eliminate them. Zach Cohen with us again, senior editor at VSiN.com, host of the Hardwood Handicappers podcast. We want to check out every single day to get your fix of NBA handicapping. Coming up in 5 minutes, your guys will take the floor out in Cleveland against the Cavaliers. Number right now, 6.5 with a total of 233 or thereabouts. What do you like in this game as your Suns are on the road?
I had a lean on the Cavaliers on the spread in this game. I just think that Cleveland is starting to play a little bit better. I know there was a really bad performance in Houston against a team that was playing without Alperen Şengün. But outside of that, I think that we've seen more good than bad out of this Cavaliers team over the last week or so. I thought that what they did in New York on Christmas Day was pretty impressive. I think that Mobley has looked good since coming back. And I do think that just overall, you know, that win over San Antonio kind of showed you the ceiling for this team. I think that Jalen Tyson is a better, you know, rotation piece than anybody that they really had outside of that core four last year. And I just kind of like what we're going to see from this team in the future. I think that they've maybe shown that when they are playing well, they might be better than last year's team. I just think it's a little bit more inconsistency. But the play I actually made in this game was Devin Booker over 25 and a half points at minus 108. And the reason that I took that is that Booker has been very, very, you know, off with his jumper lately, but at the same time, Cleveland has some small guards that really can't cover him with Garland and Mitchell. I don't think they're going to start either one of those guys defending Booker in this game, but Jordan Ott is really good at kind of getting his players mismatches, and I think we're going to see a lot of Booker kind of ISO'd on those two guys throughout the course of this game, and I think he's going to get to the free throw line in this one because the Cavs do foul a lot, and Booker scores like 7-8 points a game at the free throw line, and I do think the jumper is going to wake up eventually. Like, that jumper is way too pretty for him to be shooting like 30% from three.
Coming up at 4:10 p.m. Pacific time, New Orleans and Chicago. Sneaky news in the fact that Josh Giddey is going to be out for a little bit now for Chicago. By the way, in our big quest to get Keontae George most improved player, just one contender that will probably be to the wayside, as Giddey at one point was considered one of the favorites early in the year to get this thing. Bulls, though, 1.5-point favorite, totals 248.5. I know you like a player prop here. What's our expectation for Zion Williamson?
Yeah, I have the over 23.5 points for Williamson. This is my biggest player prop of the day. I just think that Williamson is a perfect match for this way that this Bulls team plays. Chicago is the worst team in the NBA when it comes to defending at the basket. Williamson scores 77% of his points at the rim, and I think this is going to be a very fast-paced game. I mean, New Orleans over the last 10 games, playing at the second fastest pace in the entire NBA. Chicago over the course of the entire season is number two in the league in pace. So I think it's going to be up and down. I think we're going to see a lot of transition buckets from Zion, and I do think that in the half court, he's going to attack downhill, and I don't think they're going to have much of an answer for him. Also, this is going to be a game where he's living at the free throw line. We saw him a few weeks ago go for 29 against this team. I think that he could, you know, potentially flirt with 30 here. I said it like on the podcast today. It's hard to kind of take the over on a player that doesn't shoot threes just because you need so many buckets for him to go over without them. But I do think he's going to get them.
All right, Zach Cohen with us again, progressive guest line. You can follow him up on Twitter at Betting on X. As we look ahead, is it too easy to expect Jamal Murray? Like, can he be Austin Reeves? One of the angles that we always like to play when Luka Doncic is out, and of course nobody else out there to handle the ball. Like, Jamal Murray's on his own. Is he going to have this big enough of a load on his shoulders? He's going to be able to get it done, or is Toronto too formidable on defense that he's not going to be able to do something tonight?
I really kind of think it's going to be Toronto in this game. Like, I did not have the courage to lay the 6.5. I did parlay it with some things on the money line, but I think that Toronto's defense is going to be somewhat stifling for him because I don't think he's used to being as heavy of an on-ball presence as he's about to be. I know he's a point guard. I know it's a little bit weird to say about a lead guard, but without Joker, it's just going to be all on Murray. And this Toronto team is really aggressive guarding the point of attack. They try to blitz you and just get the ball out of your hands, and it's going to be up to some of the other guys to beat Toronto, and I'm not sure they're going to be able to do it. I do think that while Joker's out, we're probably going to see Valanciunas put up some big, you know, stat lines. I think that, you know, some double-doubles are definitely in his future. But, yeah, I was with you in thinking that Murray's going to put up some big numbers soon, but I don't think that this is the right matchup for it.
You know, one of the things that I thought, again, I was too cowardly, much like you're talking about here. You know, Scottie Barnes over his last four games, you know, 19 points, 12 rebounds, you know, there's literally nobody to put a body on him out here. Maybe something worth looking at there.
Yeah, I think he had like 1,000 rebounds against the Warriors the other day. I was watching that game, and he literally came down with everything. So I don't even know how it's possible for him to be averaging 12. He should be averaging about like 20. But yeah, I do think he's going to have a pretty big game here as well.
All right, Zach, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot, as always. Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you next year.
Yeah, Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, you got it. Betting on X. And again, make sure you check out the podcast, Harwood Handicappers, out every day. Easy to listen to. 20 minutes today's episode, in and out every single game analyzed. All right, we'll come back. We'll wrap. We'll have updates across the board. We got a couple of scores to give you as well. We have not an upset brewing, but a big dog immediately in a hole. We'll tell you who that is when we return.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Get the new year off right and check out the Sharp Plays, folks. It's what you need to start your new year off the right way before the line moves. Sharp Plays is already there. You're not going to outsmart billion-dollar sports books or full-time sharps on your own. Powered by advanced AI connected to proven insider sources and active across the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and college hoops, Sharp Plays delivers the edge serious bettors rely on. Since 2011, they've backed it all up with documented results, public logs, and transparent receipts. Go to sharpplays.com. Trusted by the pros, monitored by the books. Stay ahead of the line. Visit sharpplays.com. Wrapping it up here, I think I misspoke when I was talking about my clever tease. It was a big favorite that was already in a hole. I think they said the dog was in the hole. It is Nebraska with a big touchdown run and an extra point that is good. But Utah immediately attempting to respond out here in our own backyard in Las Vegas. 7-0, Nebraska up on top, but a second and goal. Devin Dampier yanks it on a handoff, and he is going to be ruled short, although I thought he got into the end zone. We'll see if this is indeed reviewed to the point where he will be given a touchdown. That was pretty clear that he was into the end zone, but ruling him down at about the half-yard line. So a third and goal coming up. Dampier, yeah, pulled back and down. So this will be a third and goal coming up for the Utah Utes, currently trailing 7-0 in the Las Vegas Bowl. Couple of other scores really quickly as well before we get to some breaking NFL news. In college football, quite a few bowl games going on right now. Texas first on the scoreboard with a field goal. It is a 10-0 run for Michigan as they currently lead with about 105 left to go in the first. 10-3 up on top of the Longhorns. But Texas looking to respond, currently in the midst of a 5-play, 24-yard drive after a 20-yard completion, making a 6-play, 44-yard drive. They are currently at the Michigan 31-yard line. So we'll see if Texas can tie this game up. Arch Manning right now out on the field for the Longhorns, and all knotted up at 21 apiece between Arizona State and Duke. 2 minutes left to go in the second. Duke right now with a first and 10 on the Arizona State 31-yard line. And actually, I'm a little behind. Second and goal coming up for Duke. 1:54 left to go in the second quarter. With that, we do have a little bit of news in the National Football League before we get to our final previews of our college football playoff games. We have some clarity on what certain teams are going to do with certain players. Let's start with the Philadelphia Eagles. Plan here is to rest Jalen Hurts and some others in the finale against the Washington Commanders. According to reports, Tanner McKee is expected to start for the Philadelphia Eagles. This is actually going to be a pretty interesting game now, depending on the severity of the starters who are resting. You know, we're getting more news. Some certain teams, for example, some guys are being named outside of Justin Herbert that will rest for the Los Angeles Chargers. But for the Eagles, why this does matter, there's many football nerds and truthers that would say that Tanner McKee is a dude that it could be a starter in the NFL in the waiting. The small sample size that we've seen from Tanner McKee, he was pretty damn good. And here we have a 3.5-point spread now with a total of about 38.5, depending on where you look. Circa still sitting at 4 in favor of Philly with a total of 39. We saw a little bit of move here at Circa. After the news came down, they bumped this down to 3.5, got back out to 4 about 2 hours later. So this is going to be one where I would be surprised if the Eagles still get a little bit of support. These are always those kind of spots that you're looking for. And McKee is one of those dudes that does have the respect, I think, of a lot of people that he could be an effective passer should he be given an opportunity. I wouldn't be surprised if this gets a little bit higher, like 4.5 or so in favor of the Philadelphia Eagles with the news that McKee will be out there. We'll see if it actually holds true, but I do think that this is going to be something where it's worth a play on the Philadelphia Eagles. Other bits of news coming out of the National Football League. We do have some news coming out of New England as Christian Barmore is facing assault and battery charges. Defensive tackle, misdemeanor charge of assault and battery on a household or family member, according to court documents, stems from an incident on August 8th. In a Wednesday statement, Patriots said that they were made aware at the time of the incident and informed the NFL in a timely manner. We're just learning about this, but Barmore, of course, this has been a deal going back to August. Patriots, a 10.5-point favorite, total of 45.5, still do have the one seed on the line potentially, but climbing uphill on this, just given the fact that the Denver Broncos will take on a Chargers team resting Justin Herbert and some others along the way. So big news really is going to be that Tanner McKee will be getting the start for the Philadelphia Eagles, and we'll see what other names come down. Chargers naming some offensive linemen that will not be playing here for them coming up this weekend against the Denver Broncos. All right, with that, Let's take a look at a couple of other things. Actually, with the one last bit of news here, too, by the way. Marvin Harrison Jr. done for the season. That was a report that came down as well for the Arizona Cardinals. All right. Let's talk a little college football playoff here in the last couple of minutes. We've hit on most of these games. Alabama, Indiana, though, we left off with the question of what this looks like for Alabama's offense. What's the approach for Alabama on offense? It is, I think, a fascinating question. And whether or not Indiana can continue to kind of pick at the scab, if you will, of Alabama's biggest weakness on that side, which is running the ball. It's non-existent. And how do you maybe raise the floor of your rushing offense? How do you find some sort of balance? Some of the numbers for Alabama, for those who don't know off the top of their head, 101st in expected points added per rush, 131st in rushing success rate. Some of the basic numbers for you here. 97.9 rush yards per game for the Crimson Tide. That's 125th in the country. 3.2 yards per attempt. That's 127th in the country. Let's go back to the Oklahoma game where Daniel Hill runs for 43 yards. 30 of those came on one carry. Jay Miller ran for 11 yards. 7 of those came on one carry. This Alabama team has not been able to find any semblance of balance, and Indiana has defended the run extremely well all season. Top 20 in both EPA per rush by opponents and rushing success rate. Basic metrics here, third fewest rushing yards allowed per game for Indiana, 12th in terms of yards per attempt by opponents. We do know that Stephen Daly, of course, the terrible situation, which he's celebrating with fans after the Big Ten championship game, he will not be available with that injury. You do wonder if maybe that affects your rush defense to an extent. Daly was third on the team in terms of PFF rush defense grade. 24 stops, that was fourth most on the team, 19 tackles for loss. That is going to be an absence that I think will be felt for Indiana. But will it be felt here? I think that's really the question. Your offense, if you're Alabama, is so bad that I don't even think the absence of a guy like Daly is going to raise your floor in any shape or form that is going to be tangible for the Crimson Tide. The other side of this, though, and look, Twitter and social media is absolutely annoying and can be a cesspool, especially when you talk about the disingenuous way to frame statistics. And one of the things that is now happening is Fernando Mendoza and the touchdowns that he has thrown and interceptions versus certain opponents kind of being carved out to make it look like against better competition. He hasn't been able to get it done. Some have even thrown out there the Ohio State game and the Big Ten championship as one of those because he only threw one touchdown. Folks, he didn't commit a single turnover-worthy play, had three big-time throws. Those are considered throws that are further downfield into tighter windows. We saw those throws to ice the game. Mendoza's been very good. And while Alabama's a good defensive team, it's not like they're a lockdown unit by any stretch. Let's hear from Fernando Mendoza on this in terms of his mentality as they head into this game against Alabama.
Pressure's a privilege. Like, although that we, you know, we're the number one seed in the college football playoff, and we have all these high expectations, Indiana's the first time Indiana's ever done this. At the same time, we're grateful and we want this opportunity. This is what we've been working for the entire offseason. And it's not like we're here to go defend something. You know, it's like we don't have, you know, this win against the Rose Bowl. We don't have the national championship. We don't have the semifinal win yet. We don't have the Rose Bowl, you know, trophy. Or we don't have roses in our mouth yet. We got to go get it. We got to go take it. And especially against such a great team like Alabama, an SEC juggernaut, we got to go take it.
I understand the love for him. I know Stormy absolutely adores the guy in terms of his interviews and the energy and whatnot. And the play has been there. He is the starting quarterback for the ninth most efficient passing attack in college football at this point right now. In terms of EPA per pass, 0.22, that is ninth best. And, of course, from a success rate standpoint downfield for Indiana, they are the fourth best team in the country. And Alabama, as you mentioned, when you look at some of the numbers, again, this is not the lockdown unit. They're not bad by any stretch, but you're 26th in opponent expected points added per throw. You're 41st against the run. You're 35th on third down success rate on defense. This is not by any stretch a team that cannot be had. And on the other end, I think that you're looking at Alabama and thinking it is going to be tough to, again, get through a high-level game. Yes, Oklahoma was a high-level game. Despite the fact that you can't run the ball, this dips back low, below 7. That's the play. We'll see if we can get there tomorrow for Indiana, Alabama. We'll have more on Georgia and Ole Miss tomorrow as well. But I will just say, as I mentioned to Stormy too, Georgia's been good, and they have improved. And I think defensively they are a team that is not as good, or excuse me, they're better than what their overall statistical profile will tell you, which is still a very good team. Having said that, there, I think, is a reason why Georgia is still sitting at 6 and 6.5. And yet you hear conversations about this team against Ole Miss, and it's just it is smacking of an assumption that they are going to win this game and move on. They are just a 6.5-point favorite. We have not gotten to 7, and I have this sneaking suspicion because there's a lot of people, including us here at the network, a lot of us, actually the league leader, if you will, in our college playoff guide, it was Georgia to win the national championship, more than Ohio State, more than Oregon. Got this sneaking feeling that maybe the improvement that Georgia has shown is legitimate, but now maybe being a little overvalued, and those that shape the market aren't exactly rushing out there to lay this number under a touchdown. But we have plenty of time until kickoff. All right, we're all done. Follow the money. Coming up next, the guys, of course, will get you ready as they lead you into kickoff for the game tonight between Miami and Ohio State. Good luck. Happy New Year. We appreciate it. Everything you've done for us as listeners and viewers for our audience, and we hope to see you again in 2026.